This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Christy Landwehr from Aurora, Colorado. And you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Tuesday, December the 15th, episode 1319. This episode is brought to you by the Certified Horsemanship Association. Good morning, horse world.
Houston, we have a problem.
Ability equals skill plus knowledge.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Here's a safety tip for you from the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Missed it by that much.
How can I change this to make it better the next time?
Help you, I can. Yes.
Time for Training Tuesday on Horses in the Morning with the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us this morning on Horses in the Morning. We appreciate you being here. And of course, Christy is back. She's here the third Thursday of every month. Hi, Christy.
Hi, Glenn. How are you?
Good. It's good to have you back. And you sound good, even though you're in the middle of a blizzard.
It is coming down pretty good. It really is.
The last show, it was snowing there, too.
I know you're probably beginning to think that all we have here is snow, but you know what? We actually have nice days too. I rode my horses over the weekend, so it is nice too.
And you're in Colorado, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So do your kids actually get off school when it snows, or is it just like we know what to do with snow? You're going to school.
You know what? Very rarely do they get off school, but they do have snow days tied in, and today is one of them. And I think the reason why is I think the teachers get up in the morning and the principal and the bus drivers, and they all call each other. Maybe they Skype together and they say, we're not doing it today. We want to go back to bed.
That's right. They don't want to go to school either. See, that's what people forget is they don't want to be there either. So
no, I think they have more Christmas shopping to do.
Exactly. Especially this time of year. So your kids have the day off. They're probably sleeping in till noon.
Oh, you know what? One of them is already up watching cartoons and very excited. The other one is definitely going to sleep until noon. I have two very opposite, morning guys.
Yeah, I was always that early morning one, and my brothers, I got mad at my brothers because I could not sleep that late. And they would sleep till, noon, 1 o'clock. It's like, how does that happen? I could never do it. See, I was destined to be a horse guy eventually, I guess.
Get up early. Get it done.
That's right. Well, Jennifer, do you have an On Today show for us today?
I do. On today's Certified Horsemanship Association Tuesday, we are anticipating a very tacky show. Starting out with a little get-to-know-you chat with Dale Meyer, the man behind Myler Bits. And then next up, Bob Burns talks about saddles and saddle fit. And in the third half, we go back to the front of the horse with Mitzi Summers, and she's going to chat a little bit about bitless bridles. So stay tuned for the fight, folks.
Thank you, Jennifer. Appreciate that. Well, Christy, what's going on with the CHA?
You know, we're in kind of that time of year where we're doing year-end stuff and kind of wrapping up. I just got back from the Arabian Horse Convention, and they welcomed me with open arms. We had a great time. I did a really fun keynote. And, I'm normally asked, Glenn, when I go and do talks for organizations, I'm normally the educational girl. I'm the breakout session girl. I get an hour and a half. I get a lot of Q&A time. I get all that. And they said, no, we want you to be entertaining and talk during lunch to the whole session for about 30 minutes.
You know what? I have to do a keynote coming up too. And I'm the same way as you. I'm used to doing the how do you do it.
Yes.
Sessions, and then you get to a keynote. You're there to motivate and inspire. It's a whole different game.
Totally different. And you wouldn't think how different. So I created a literally 30-minute PowerPoint presentation that took me 16 hours.
To very create stressful. It, you mean, to make it? And then you go over it, and then you actually say it in front of your wife or your husband or whoever, and then they go, oh. And then you have to redo it. And it's just like this process. It's like writing a book.
It's intense.
Yeah. How'd it go? Well, intense. How'd you do?
You know what? I think I have a new calling. I had so much fun. I had a very good time entertaining and inspiring and doing all those things. And hopefully everyone thought it was okay. And if anyone's listening now and you were there and you didn't like it, don't tell me because I'm on a high right now.
Yes, I had fun. So you have to have fun. That's right. I don't care if you didn't have any fun. I had a good time.
That's right. I enjoyed it. And it was really fun for me because the last time I had seen some of those folks was 16 years ago when I worked for them. And the president, Cynthia Richardson, she lives here in Colorado. She's our current president. She's so great. She sat me down at the table with all the people that I used to know from back in the day. So I got to have lunch with my old buddies. So that was great.
The American one? Is that who you were with?
Right. The Arabian Horse Association that's located here in Colorado. Yeah. And I used to work for the Breed Association many years ago. And so it was fun to kind of come full circle and see them all again.
There's a lot of Arabian breeders and people with Arabians in the country in many different aspects. Is there a lot of people that show up at the convention?
You know, the convention was big. Yes. I don't know what their total numbers were, but it was definitely in the hundreds. And they talk about all kinds of things. You know, the Professional Horsemen Committee, I got to sit in on that one and kind of hear some of their rule changes and things going on. And got to, they had a great silent auction that all goes towards the youth association. And it was fun. And then of course they do tours around the local area. And we were in Tulsa and we were within walking distance of all the good food. So that was fun too. So very good time.
What's the hot topic with Arabians this year?
You know, I don't know if there was really one hot topic. It's kind of like what all of us are dealing with. And I kind of came back and I told some of my quarter horse folks and paint horse folks and thoroughbred. I mean, it doesn't really matter what you're doing. You know, we have to be concerned about animal welfare and be concerned about, you know, the cell phone being pulled out at any given second and any kind of thing being taped. So, and then misinterpreted based on how it's edited and misinterpreted based on even something as simple as putting it in slow-mo and putting it up on, you know, YouTube or whatever the case may be. So I think all the breeds and disciplines are really having to be cautious of that right now, which is probably a good thing. But just making sure that, you know, our training methods are good and that we're taking proper care of our animals.
We have that all the time on the Driving Radio Show. You know, we're big supporters of the New York carriages, and we try and highlight on the Driving Radio Show smaller commercial carriage operations around the country because they all have unique things and carriages and horses and stuff, right? So we try and give them some love, but many of them will, if they haven't heard of us, will go check on us to make sure we aren't, you know, PETA in hiding.
Yes.
So, and I don't blame them. You know, I don't blame them for that because the last thing you want to do is get you know, sideswiped in an interview. But you know, once they figure out we're here to help, so we're one of you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and one of the things that I talked about in my talk, it was like a generational talk about marketing to different generations. And then I had a whole segment on what's called a why statement and creating not just your purpose and your mission, but your why. You know, why do we do it? Nike's Just Do It is more than just their tagline. It's their why statement. We do it so that people can get out and do their sport, right? That's what we do. And when CHA, when we first created our why statement, we thought, oh boy, 18 horse people from all different aspects of life in a room together creating a statement. This is going to take years. It took 2.5 hours. And it's CHA changes lives through safe experiences with horses. And it just came to us. It wasn't hard to do. And I think when you create your why statement and it has that much purpose, it's really pretty neat. But I also talked about kind of the sports industry as a whole. We have a really unique program here in Colorado that I wish somehow horse stables and barns across the country could do the same thing. And it's called Colorado Ski. And basically all the ski resorts got together and created a fifth grade and sixth grade passport program where the fifth graders ski for free all year with free rentals. And the sixth graders ski for $99 all year. And if both parents come, one parent skis for free. So all of a sudden now my family of four can afford to go skiing because I only have to pay for one adult and one child. And I just wish, boy, if we could do something like that in the horse industry. The golf industry has a similar program, and so does the aviation industry, actually, because we're having less and less pilots now that are actually graduating. So you can actually go to some of your local airports and ask somebody to take your children up in a Cessna to give them the excitement about being up in an airplane. And then they get to sit in the cockpit and actually hold the actual steering wheel for a little bit while I'm sure it's on autopilot, but hold the steering wheel for a second and get that enthusiasm of wanting to do that. And boy, if the horse industry could do something like that, all it takes, Glenn and Jen, you two know, is one touch and a lot of people are hooked.
Right, right. Yeah, that is an interesting point. And so I assume that the Arabian Association is having the same problem with a lack of youngsters coming in.
I think it's across the board, breed and discipline. Yes, I think that there are...
the most common thing we hear.
Uh-huh, absolutely. But
I'll
tell you...
Is there an association of associations?
Is
there a convention where all of the different breeds and discipline associations get together?
I would say the one that most people go to is the American Horse Council meeting. Mm-hmm. That's held in D.C. in June, and it's more than going and lobbying, even though that's the primary reason why people go. We do all get together to chat about issues and industry trends, and we're very candid and open with each other when we show each other our numbers to try to say, you know, what's working, what's not working, and how can we brainstorm?
Hmm, interesting. I have to come up to that one sometime. I've never been to that one.
You should. It's a good one.
I have to do that. Well, you also have some DVDs for sale that really tie into what we're talking about today and are great for the holidays as well.
Yes, I just wanted to share with everybody, you know, we have a free YouTube channel where we have over 38 YouTube videos on there now that are in between 2 and 5 minutes in length that you can certainly utilize at any time, put on your own websites, do whatever you'd like with. But then we also have full-length hour to two-hour DVDs where we tape our international conference presenters that are talking on certain topics, and then you can, and we do have a sale right now on those. They are 25% off. You just put in to the message box when you order them online, or when you call us, just say DVD sale. We've keeping it really easy, and we can go ahead and get those to you in time for the holidays still if you hurry.
And how do they find it again?
You go to our website, which is chainstructors.com.
chainstructors.com, and then go to the, is there a store link?
There is a store, and then when you go to store, Glenn, you just click on the DVD video button, and you can see all the titles there, and a little, we actually have a 1 minute promo on each one too that you can watch to see if it's going to fit your needs.
Okay, good. I always like to clarify that because you have a lot of stuff on your website. So I do see it. I see stored DVDs. It's right there, like you said. And they're not that bad a price. So you know, they would make great gifts. Good stocking stuffers.
That's right. And they would fit in the stocking because they're nice and thin.
That's right. That's right. Although, you know what? We had to play a DVD the other day and I had to go find a DVD player. I have one. I just never hooked it up to TV because everything's streaming now.
Right. So good point.
And you know what? My new computer doesn't have a DVD slot. They don't come with them anymore. So it's like I had to go hook one up to just play one.
See, now you're stressing me out. Now you're making me think, we should probably stream all these.
Yeah. Just have a download button.
Okay, it's a project for
January. Yeah, there you go. So I counted me to give you something else to do next year.
That's right. That's good. Put it on my to-do list. You're making sure that I'm never bored, Glenn. That's good.
There you go. All right. Well, we are, Jennifer's going to get our first guest on here, but you know, you really have a theme for today. So talk a little bit about that and why you chose today's theme.
Yes, you know, it kind of makes me laugh. You know, it's like that whole idea of so many shoes, so little time. Well, for us, I think it's so much tack, so little time. I don't know about the listeners on today, but boy, I love the smell of a tack shop. I love going in there and smelling the leather. We had this amazing tack shop in California, and I'm sorry, there is not one out here in Colorado that compares, in my personal opinion. It was called the Broken Horn. It was in Baldwin Park. And it was amazing. It was two stories of just tack, and the bits were shimmering on the wall, and all the Western saddles, all the English saddles, all the clothes you could ever want. Oh, it was amazing. So we chose today to do our topic on that because we thought, boy, if you open up a Dover or a State Line or whatever tack catalog you get, it is constantly like, what is what and huh? So we thought we'd bring on three experts today to talk about kind of their personal preferences, knowing that, you know what you don't talk about at the dinner table, Glenn, with a horse trainer?
Yes.
You don't talk about politics, religion, and what?
Yes.
Bits and bidding. Bits. That's right. So we're going to start by talking about bits and kind of move on from there today. But we're excited about the show.
Well, we actually chatted a little bit yesterday. Horse Nation did an article on the things that you can post on Facebook to inflame all of your horsey friends, and bits was one of them.
Yes.
You know, and it doesn't matter what comment you make on bits. It doesn't matter. And the other thing we learned is, you know, that we learned, we posted a little video of Scooter getting on a trailer yesterday, and apparently that can cause issues too. So, no matter what you post, I think it's no matter what you post, it's a problem.
So here is the disclaimer for the show.
Okay.
Certified Horsemanship Association does not endorse any certain type of tack. We want the tack to be safe and effective for your horse. And so therefore, we know that there are a large variety of combinations of tack to use. And it's kind of up to you to talk to a professional about what tack would be best for you and your horse.
Especially when we talk about saddle fitting, right? Because that's something that really, you know, an expert does have to look at. You can talk about it all day long, but until somebody actually looks at it and sees the exact problem, it's not something that we're going to solve over the radio.
And you know, you're absolutely right. And we do
We can give pointers, you know, here with our guests and things, but that's all it's going to be.
And I'll tell you, you can do an 8-hour clinic on saddle fit and still have a lot to learn. I mean, I've always learning about saddle fit. We have Bob Burns coming on today later on. He's from the Parsons Cavalry Unit down in Texas A&M University. And he's done quite a bit with, you know, those old cavalry saddles and all kinds of things.
McClellan,
so we're really excited
saddles
to have him on. Yes, yeah. We're thrilled to have him on. And then Mitzi Summers, she's very involved in centered riding and in dressage. So she's kind of, we have the Western person today and the English person, so we can talk to kind of both sides of that coin. And again, you know, many numerous ideas she has about tack that she likes to use and why. So we all end up with our personal preferences.
But then we're going to start the day, though, with that B word.
We sure are. So on the show now, we're going to have Dale Myler. Dale is known for his kind and thoughtful approach, and he is motivated by a genuine desire to do just what he talked about, Glenn, to improve the relationship between the horse and the rider. He has done a lot of research into bidding, including equine dentistry, and he's also doing a lot between the function of the bit and horse behavior. So he has consulted with many top riders and trainers in every discipline, and he has also conducted bidding clinics around the U.S. and in the world. As a matter of fact, he's been to our international conference, Glenn, a couple of times, so we are absolutely thrilled. Hello, Dale. How are you today?
I'm fine, Christy. How are you?
Doing fine. I'm so excited to have you on the show.
Well, it sounds good to me. I'm glad to be here.
Well, if we could start today by giving us a little bit more of your background and talking about your two brothers, Ron and Bob, and how you started this whole entire Mylar program.
Well, actually, my brother Ron started it. He was a betting horse trainer for a lot of years, and all the time he was training horses for the public, he was building bridle bits. And what he was trying to accomplish is he was trying to get a horse more relaxed into the bridle, because the more relaxed they are, the more focused they are. And the other thing is he needed to be able to put the shoulders wherever he wanted them, because a horse moves to the shoulder. He does not move to the head and neck. The shoulder is the position he goes from. So he just kept building bits, and then every once in a while somebody wanted a bit he was building, and it turned into a little bit of a business. And then my brother Bob, he left Texas. He was out in Houston, Texas, and he come back and started building bits with us. And he's been really instrumental in developing a lot of the different mouthpieces and everything and the way that they function, so that we try to make it easier for the signal to become more precise for the horse and rider for what it is they're trying to accomplish. And then I'm just the fat guy that runs around the country and runs off at the mouth. So that's about all there is.
Dale, I'll tell you.
And I think there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying.
Two peas in a pod.
That's well, right. Dale, somebody's got to do what we do, Dale. Somebody's got to do it.
That's right. And I'm better at running off the mouth than anything else I do.
I'm with you.
But Dale, what you just said is so absolutely perfect. You do not move the horse by moving his head and his neck. You move him by moving his shoulder, because how many people, I'm just going to turn this head around here, and then where does the hip go? Oh, that hip's not going where I want it to go. Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. So I think that that's really
good.
That you created a system that works for that. So if there was one thing about how bits work that you would like people to understand better, what would you tell them?
The one thing that is so important for people to realize, there's two things. One is, a horse is only as good as the time you have to put into them. These horses are like athletes. They've got to be conditioned. They've got to be trained. So they're only become as good as the time you've got to devote to them. The other thing is, bits do not train horses. People train horses, not bridle bits. There's only two things that a bit does. It creates a horse to become evasive and go away from contact, or allows the horse to become more relaxed and come towards contact. Those are the only two things a bit does, period. They never have trained an animal. People train animals, not bridle bits.
Wonderful point. And I think you're right about that. How many times do we hear, unfortunately, well, let's get a harsher bit. Let's get a harsher bit. Let's get a harsher bit. I mean, and that's not the solution to anything. And the definition of harshness comes from the hands of the rider, not necessarily how the bit's created, too. So I think that's super. So, Dale, how do you go about helping people choose what might work best for their riders and horses?
Well, we do a questionnaire. We need to get the history of the horse. If somebody just calls us or walks into a tack store and says, my horse won't stop, what do you have to put on him? Anything you say is just a guess, because you've got to have the history. So our questionnaires, we find out how old the horse is. We find out when the dental work was done, which is so very important, because so many things happen inside of a horse's mouth within the first 5 years, that the dental work is extremely important. It's the number one thing when you're going to rebit a horse. And then we find out what bit you've had on the horse. What bit did you have that worked the best for you? What bit did you get the least best ride out of? Then we figure out what were the pressure points of these bits that you've already had on the horse. Then we find out, you know, what's the reaction of your horse when your horse spooks? Is he a horse that bolts and leaves, or is he a horse that just gets real excited and looks around and then just comes right back and is easy to refocus? So we ask a lot of questions. We need the history of the horse. How many times a week do you get to ride? What's your experience? So what we're trying to evaluate here is, The only thing there is to bit in a horse, period, is when I walk up to a horse, first thing I think when I look at a horse is, what will you allow me to do for you today and the rider still be able to handle you? What will you allow me to do? How much will you allow me to free you up and this rider still be able to handle you and have confidence doing it? And that's all there is to bit in a horse, but you have to have the history to try and figure out if this bit was, the reaction of the horse from this bit was like this, the reaction from the other one was like this. Now we know the pressure points of those bits. Let's figure out what the horse is asking for between us, not just me or not my brothers, but between us and the people that own the horse.
And you want it to be something that's going to last for a long time. So I think that that's great. And don't you have kind of a system in Myler where you start maybe with different kinds of bits and then you kind of work your way all depending on the horse's training?
Actually, it's not so much dependent on the horse's training. That's a starting point, you know, when you go to books and stuff like that. But what we actually do is we always make the statement, you never bit a horse to the maneuver of the horse. You always bit the horse to the mind of the horse. The more relaxed the mind is, the more the horse is focused on what it is you're trying to teach him. And what I don't think people actually understand so much, because I do this in all my clinics and seminars, I ask people where a horse actually collects from. And 99% of the people say a horse collects from the back up through the front. So I'll ask them, if you're going to get out of a chair, how are you going to do that? And they'll go through every part of their body. I'll move my neck, I'll move my shoulders, I'll move my hips. Sometimes it can take up to 2 minutes before anybody says, my mind. The mind is the absolute. Nothing ever happens from a human being's standpoint that doesn't go through their mind first. Nothing happens that an animal does that doesn't go through the mind first. The mind is the absolute. The more relaxed the mind, the more focused the animal.
Absolutely. And that tension, you know, we talk about all the time as riding instructors, Dale, about breathing, because if the rider's breathing, then the horse is breathing, which means that then their mind is good. You know, I have my riders sing all the time, row, row, row your boat or something, right? Just to get them to breathe. So yes, that focus, I love that comment that it comes from the mind. So you have a book, don't you, that is helpful for people? Can you tell us more about that?
Well, we do have a book. It's The Level Best for Your Horse. And this goes through a lot of the different bits and everything. But what happens there when you were talking about the system is most people that call us, they may not go back to level one. Most of them won't go to level one because they're already having problems with a bit like that. So we try and figure out where do we have to go to let this horse keep evolving and become a better animal for you and for the rider and the horse's mind itself. So, yeah, there's a lot of information in that book, and it has, over the years, been very well received. But I don't know. You know, I hate to say anything about something that we helped write, but it seems like they've sold a pretty good number of them. Also, a person can go to toeclatoriginals.com and find out more about our product if they're interested in our product.
Yes, the Toeclat website has a great button where you click for Myler and all of your different bits and all the information about them come up. So I think that that's great. So Dale, we're at the end of our time. Is there anything that you would like to leave us with today?
The only thing I would like to say is what we've already talked about. It is the mind of the animal, not anything else. If a horse is relaxed in the mind, then you can move his shoulder. Every maneuver stems from the shoulder. So if you've got a relaxed mind and can control the shoulder, you can control every part of that animal's body. If a horse's mind is not relaxed, he's always focused on two things. He's focused on what you're trying to show him, and he's focused on how to get away from something you're doing to him. So you've lost part of the focus. The more relaxed the mind, the more focused the animal.
Thank you, Dale. And I hope I'm going to be in contact with you later on. We're going to be in Nashville in October for our international conference. Maybe you want to come out and see all of our members again.
Just get a hold of Judy. I'm sure we will.
Okay. Sounds good, Dale. Thanks so much for being on our show today.
Thank you. We certainly appreciate it. And you have a great Christmas and New Year's.
Thank you. You as well.
Thank you.
There's a guy that's forgotten more about bidding than you and I will ever know.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. And you know, it's so much fun to see him in action. He's very, very good. He's not just out to sell the Myler system. He's about making the horse better. You can come to him with any kind of bid. It doesn't matter if it's a Myler bid or not, and talk about it. And he'll explain the mechanics of it and how it works and what's going on with it. And he's very, very thorough.
Very cool. Did you want to, Jennifer is, looks like Jennifer is trying to get the next guest on. Did you want to do your video that we had talked about?
We can go ahead and do that for a little bit. Yeah, so we create these YouTube videos. So what Glenn's going to do now is going to go ahead and do a little audio clip of one that was created in regards to this kind of safety check as a whole in regards to tack.
Very good. Let me get it queued up, and hopefully we don't hit the commercial.
Tip brought to you from the Certified Horsemanship Association on tack check. When you tack check your horse, you want to make sure that you do it from both sides. I like to go to the off side first. When you're going around, you want to make sure that everything on the horse where it connects, especially where metal and leather connects, that there's no wear and tear on any of that. You're going back and you're going to be checking different parts of the saddle and of the stirrups and of the cinch. I like to start with the bit and make sure that it's fitting correctly in my horse's mouth and evenly. Then I like to go up here and make sure that the cheek pieces are correct, that the cabochon or the noseband is correct on the horse's face with one finger in between to make sure that it's snug enough. Then you want to make sure that there are the three fingers underneath the throat latch, and that if you do have all keepers connected, you want to make sure that all that are there so that you don't have any flapping of the leather pieces. You want to go ahead and go up your reins. Make sure that they are connected and not frayed. You want to make sure that when you have a buckle on your reins that it is also connected and not frayed. When you go to check the saddle, you want to make sure that the gullet of the pad has airflow for the horse's back and is up in the pommel of your saddle. You also want to check underneath here and make sure that your pad is correctly connected to your horse's saddle. You want to make sure that the first billet is connected if you have a pad like this, and that also your cinch or girth is going correctly through the pad down here. You also want to make sure that underneath, up where the stirrup attaches, that this keeper right here is down. The safety bar should be down at all times, for if you do ride and you get your stirrup caught, the stirrup will come off the saddle correctly. You only want to put your stirrups down right before you're about to ride your horse. Otherwise, always roll them up the back and attach them so that at all times they're not banging the horse on the horse's sides. And again, when you're going to be leading the horse, always make sure to have the reins up and over the horse's head.
And that was obviously for English saddles. We also have one on Western saddles. And now I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, who is an expert on the Western saddle side of things. Bob Burns is a manager advisor for Parsons Mounted Cavalry. The PMC is a ceremonial unit of the Corps of Cadets at Texas A&M University. The cavalry has 90 cadets, 55 horses, a 1902 horse-drawn field gun, and a mule-drawn escort wagon. The horses there have been made many, many public appearances. They are trained and ridden by Bob himself and by the cadets. Bob has 20 years experience in saddle fitting, restoration of saddles, and repair of them. And we are proud to say that he's also a master instructor for us and a clinician for us as well. So hello, Bob. How are you today?
Good morning. We're great here in Aggieland.
We love that you're great there in Aggieland. You know, I have something going on today that doesn't happen in Aggieland very often. We've got about 6 inches and it's coming down hard.
Well, it's the high is supposed to be 74 today, and it's sunny.
I know, Bob. I'm very jealous of that. Thank you for sharing that.
Although we did have 8 inches of rain last week. So
you're going to be nice and green and humid again come summer, which is lovely, too.
That's right.
So, Bob, I know I introduced you a little bit, but we'd love to get a little bit more of your background and experience. What would you like to share with us today?
Well, I'm an English saddle maker by trade and training, and I also have done a lot of Western work. And, of course, I'm involved in military saddles now because I run a cavalry unit here at A&M. I had a saddle shop in Tomball, Texas, which is outside of Houston, for 11 years, and I did every kind of work that is imaginable.
Well, we are so glad that you are on
A&M today. And great. Well, I'm glad to be here.
Well, you have a huge interest in saddles, and where do you think that interest began?
Well, I'm a lifetime horseman, and I started out riding at a young age, and I just was always interested in saddles at a time in my career when I worked for Caterpillar and was a sales manager. I needed some agriculture thing to do, and I started restoring antique Western saddles in my garage, actually, and kind of went to school and went on from there and opened a business and kept the business going forever. I've done saddle fitting clinics both as part of my shop and also for the public and for our cadets here. We teach saddle fitting. I think one of the most critical elements about riding a horse successfully is that the saddle fits. I raced endurance horses for a while, and saddle fit was a big deal there. And I had a lot of dressage customers in my shop, and saddle fit was premier there. And we had a lot of reiners and cutters, and they think things about saddle fitting. So I've been around the saddle fitting business and I'm interested in it.
So for our listeners today, I know many of us often get into a situation where we want to buy a saddle. And what do you think are some of the most important things that a buyer of a saddle should look for?
I think the very first thing is that the saddle fits. No matter what type of saddle it is, whether it's a Western saddle or an English saddle or a park seat saddle or a military saddle, the fit of that saddle to that horse is critical. And if it doesn't fit, then everything else becomes secondary. You know, quality of the saddle even, or maker or build or wherever. You know, if the saddle fits, then everything else kind of will fall in place. There are some really bad, cheap imitation saddles being made overseas in Pakistan and India and to a degree in Mexico. And those, some of them just are structurally not safe, you know. But other than that, I think saddle fit's my big number one thing.
And do you think people should buy new or used saddles?
It depends on what they're going to use it for, and what their experience level is. If their experience level is entry level or minimum, then I think they definitely should buy a used saddle. And I think they should buy it locally. And going on the internet and buying saddles is problematical. And I think that they should try it out before they ride it. Know that disciplines change, saddle styles change, but a good, sound, used saddle is probably the best place to start. You know, once you get at a higher level of riding, then you can go into custom-built saddles that are built specifically for you and your horse, and, you know, you can really get in there and spend a lot of money on saddles of all kinds.
Well, and I know you talk a lot about fit, and boy, fit could be like an 8-hour discussion, but are there some tips that you could guide people today to fit both horse and rider that they might want to look out for?
I think the number one thing is the analogy I make with saddle fits is it is just like shoes. The way a saddle fits a person is the way shoes fit. If the shoes are too tight, your performance is going to be way down. If they're too big, you can add some socks to your shoes, but your performance still is not going to be like it should be. The way that you can cripple a horse the fastest with a ill-fitting saddle is to have the pommel and the resting directly on the backbone. If that is really less than about 2 fingers, 3 fingers above the withers, then you're going to have real issues because that vertebra along there is has no padding and has a lot of nerve ends in it. And if you bruise that bone, then you get what's called fistulas, and they become boiling sores and oftentimes cause horses to either be unrideable or even have to be put down.
Absolutely. And so I'll tell
in answer to that, you know, if the saddle fits too high above the withers, a full hand, 6 inches, then it's too narrow and it impacts their shoulder blades. If it fits too low, then it impacts their backbone. So somewhere around 2 to 3 fingers of clearance under the gullet and above the withers is pretty much ideal. And then you go from there, you start looking at, are the bars fitting along the backbone and or along the muscle mass there? It's called the longissimus dorsi. It runs along each side of the backbone. And so you can look at all those factors. But the number one factor is the gullet fit correctly along the withers and the shoulder blade?
I would agree. And how many times do we always say, put that pad up in the gullet to allow that airflow? And if you don't have a place to put the pad in the gullet, then you already got part of your problem going on. That means that you're a little bit too low. And then, you know,
that's
that whole
correct.
Concept.
Most people, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Bob.
Most people, you know, they'll put a saddle on and girth it up and they'll check the saddle from the ground, but they forget that they're going to put, you know, 150 or 250 pound person on that saddle. And they don't take that into consideration. So it needs to be fit with the rider on the saddle too.
I agree. And the other thing I think we do a lot, you know, I was taught that old rule, you know, where you hold up your three fingers like a Girl Scout and you put that right behind the horse's elbow and your cincher girth should be right after that. Well, every horse's scapula, right? Their shoulder is also different. Some horses, you look at it, you're like, wow, that girth is far back from that elbow. That is no way. The three finger rule's working there, right? But it's all dependent on where that shoulder goes and how far back, especially some of your English horses that have that big long trot, like you were talking about your dressage saddles that you used to, you know, do for people. That's a huge deal too. So there's so much to saddle fit.
That's correct. And also the terrain you're riding in, you know, you'll see a lot of the Western saddles in the Rocky Mountains and Northwest have their girth ring far back or, you know, somewhere even close to the middle of the belly sometimes. And a lot of that is because of all the motion of going up and down hills and mountains. And, whereas in Texas, you might see the girth ring in a Western saddle, you know, just like you say, 3 inches behind the elbow.
So it does depend. So I know, you know, some of us have had our saddles forever because maybe we live in climates where we're lucky and we don't have a whole lot of rain rot or a whole lot of dryness, or maybe we're one of those people that actually take care of it a whole lot. But what is some of your tips on saddle maintenance to keep them serviceable for years?
Well, the best thing you can do for a saddle is to keep it clean. And, here we use Murphy's oil soap, 1 cup per gallon. So it's just a light, vegetable-based soap.
And are you still there, Bob?
Yep, I'm still here.
Okay, great.
So we clean them with a light mixture of Murphy's oil. And we wipe them off, and we use a product called Skidmore's, which is it's beeswax and harness oil and lanolin. But any good saddle cream will work. Neat's foot oil in cooler climates works fine. In warm climates, it tends to attract rats and insects. Same is true with olive oil. Both of those are things that people use. You can buy really good harness grade oil that has a mildew inhibitor in it that if you're in this part of the country, it's good. And then we like to just lightly oil that saddle before it gets completely dry. You want the pores to be as open as they're going to be. And we like to lightly oil that saddle and maybe let it sit a couple hours and then oil it again. And, you know, that's the time to check the stirrup leathers and the girths and the cinch straps and everything else. Probably in a high use situation, you ought to do that, but at least clean it monthly. If not, then at least every 3 to 4 months. But it's important not to oil a saddle prior to it being cleaned. If you do, the oil is a penetrant and all it does is just suck all that dirt into the leather and cause rapid deterioration.
That's a good thing to know. It's kind of like your hair. You want to shampoo it before you condition it. Same
correct.
Idea.
That's exactly right.
So let's go to tree selection. I know that there's many different types of, you know, the tree width, and you could even get into the twists of, you know, the different saddles and whatnot. Could you briefly explain the different types and the materials used on English and Western saddle trees?
Okay, so we'll start with the English. In English saddles, there's basically two types. There's a spring tree saddle, and there's a flat saddle, or one that does not have springs in it. in almost all modern saddles now, except gated horse saddles and a few of the old plantation saddles. Almost all of them are spring treat. There's some composites being used pretty successfully. That, you know, the traditional saddle tree is some type of soft wood covered with some type of material. It can be rawhide, it can be canvas. We dip ours in bedliner here. That's what we use. But so in the English world, there's trees that are designed for what's being done. So if it's flat work, you know, it's one type of tree. If it's the horse is going to jump, it's another type. So that's kind of the two big types. Now there's dressage trees and there's, you know, hunter jumper trees, and there's just trees for everything. But basically the spring trees have a piece of spring steel that's mounted from the fore to the aft on the underside underneath the panels and below the bars. That's what causes the flex in the saddle. So in a Western saddle, same. They're made of traditionally a soft wood, pine, or even cottonwood. Some of the old saddles are cottonwood. Now they're making some out of composite, like the stuff they used to make racing canoes and kayaks. But again, it's all covered with something. Like I told you, we swim in ours a lot, and they get wet a lot. And so we use something other than rawhide. But, and then the tree, again, it depends. The two big break points in a Western saddle are you going to rope off of it or not? And if you're going to rope off of it, then you have one type of tree and one type of strength area. And if you're not, then that can be a little less tree. And, you know, speed work, barrel racers and all that are looking for lightness. Endurance people, same thing.
So you just mentioned swimming, and I can't not, I've got to find out. When do you swim the horses? What do you do? I want to hear about this.
Oh, we just, if we're in around water, you know, we try to get in water as much as we can. And we're in such a humid environment that these saddles are just, they're completely wet every day. And I don't know if you're familiar with a McClellan, but a McClellan's basically a tree covered with leather and nothing else. And it's real light and great for the horse and fits really well. But, you know, every bit of moisture just kind of sits on that saddle. And
okay.
Here in
hey, Bob,
Gulf
I have
Coast,
to,
we get wet.
I have to ask you about the McClellan. We've been to a lot of Civil War reenactments over the years and seen a lot of the McClellan saddles. And I think everybody kind of knows what they look like. How comfortable are they? I mean, they had to be somewhat comfortable, or those guys wouldn't have been able to sit in them for months on end. But they don't look comfortable.
Well, what I tell people that come here to visit is my cadets are taught to ride. 95% of them have never been on a horse, and they're taught to ride bareback with a halter and a single lead rope. And they do that for 3 months. And by the time they get through with that, a McClellan looks pretty comfortable. and you know, the military taught exactly the same way, and they had exactly the same philosophy. The other consideration is that cavalry troopers could weigh no more than 140 pounds, 175
right?
pounds with all of their battle gear. And so they were little wiry people, and they didn't, you know, the average weight of my cadets is probably 180. I don't know. They're all great big.
Right.
And so the women, I look at the women and say, you know, you're the only one in here that could have been in the cavalry in the old days. So.
I didn't realize that.
To answer your question, they are very comfortable. Once you get used to riding them, you have complete contact with the horse. They breathe really well, so the horse's backs stay a lot cooler because they're open in the gullet, you know, or they're open
right. They have that hole in the middle, basically.
The seat, and,
yeah.
And you can move the girths up and down depending on, you know, if a horse gets sore, you can just move it back an inch or 5 inches or 6 inches or whatever you want. And they're very easy to maintain. They were designed to be repaired in the field. They have all the straps are inch and a quarter, and So you can just kind of almost do every, except a broken tree, almost anybody could repair anything on their McClellan.
Did they come?
That said, though, there's...
Yeah, go ahead.
If you're looking at the old antique ones and trying to restore them, they're not a good fit for modern horses. We do not use original McClellans because the old cavalry horses were real narrow and had high withers and narrow legs, and that doesn't fit modern horses at all. We have a saddle maker out in San Angelo, and he builds them for us, and we designed the tree to fit the horses, so it's kind of a different.
Well, that brings up a good question. Back in the 1800s, were there different tree sizes, or was it one size fits all?
No, I think they made different tree sizes. I've had all different. I used to restore a lot of antique. There's a lot of collectors in Houston, and they would bring them in, and we'd restore them to put in their offices and stuff. And you see everything, you know, just like now. A lot back then, a lot of the tree makers made their own tree. So they now there's probably half a dozen tree makers that make every tree in the nation or in the world, really. And, you know, with a very few high-end custom exceptions, everybody buys from the same, you know, four or five different vendors. So, yeah, they made different trees, different designs, different widths, different heights. Yeah.
Cool.
So, Bob, you had mentioned something about a broken tree, and I know a lot of people, we've heard that term, but I don't know if people know how to test for that. How do you test for a broken tree?
Well, let's start with an English tree. You take the points, which are right below the panel, and you put them on your hip bones. And then you take the back of the cantle and you just flex it. And if it's broken, you'll feel it and hear it. It'll pop or it'll creak really loud. And so that tests basically the bars. And then to test the points, you take it and turn it sideways and lean against the wall and just put the points on your hip and another point on the wall. And you can break it, you know, if you're big and strong, you know, you just want to kind of flex it a little bit. So when you flex it both those ways, you can pretty much tell if they're broken. English saddles tend to break the points off, you know, below the head nail. And then they also break right where the twist is, right in the, where the stirrup bars are. And then Western saddles, you set them down. If they have a horn, you set the horn on the ground and set them on something hard and then just press on the back of the cantle and you get the same effect. You can do them on your hips too, but you got to be kind of a big person. And, you know, but you press them down like that and then you take them and put them on the side and you check the points and angle same way, just lean it against the wall and listen. And it's real obvious. I mean, it when they're broken, they're, you know, they may not look like it when you're riding them, or you may not even hear it. But once you start flexing them, you can tell they're broken.
And you never want to use a broken treed saddle, do you? And are they even fixable?
Never. They are fixable, but in most cases, much more expensive than it's worth. I mean, a saddle maker basically has to rebuild the saddle completely. You know, they take all the leather off and then they try to match the original tree, which is difficult. If it's a high end saddle, you know, a custom built, then they may send it off to the tree maker and have a tree made that duplicates the old one. But it's a 6 month to a year process and costs a lot of money.
Now, could we talk a little bit? I know when we were talking about saddle cleaning, it was mainly for leather, but you know, there's a lot of synthetic saddles out there too. Could you explain, in your opinion, some advantages and disadvantages to leather versus synthetic saddles?
Sure. We have transitioned here to all biofame for our rigging and our halters, not halters, but our bridles. I like the stuff a lot. You can wash it off with a hose. And
especially here in Florida, we love it in Florida.
Yeah,
you can wash it off.
My favorite story is I had the Lipizzan Stallions came to Houston one time and they invited me to go and go backstage. And I And I was looking at them, and they were all riding Wintec saddles. And I said, are you kidding me? You know, you're the premier. They said, oh, we could never do this in Europe, but they're the best. You know, you can run over them with a truck. You can wash them all with a hose. They're great. And so I thought, well, it's good enough for Spanish riding school. It's probably good enough for me. But I like the synthetic. The only, probably the downside, which is also the upside, is that things do not break that are synthetic. Like this bio thing that we use, I mean, the horse gets caught up in the stirrup leather or flips over, and it just doesn't break. I mean, the trees will break, and, you know, maybe the bars might come out of the stirrup bars, but the material itself just is almost unbreakable.
You know, that's the reason why when we drive carriages, we use almost all synthetic, and we have to carry a very, very, very sharp serrated knife along to cut the horse out if we have to. And they also have quick releases on the harnesses now, so that we can just pull a lever and the harness will be released in the various points, because when they flip over, it was a problem. That stuff just doesn't break.
Well, we do a lot of driving here. We drive big teams and also pull guns and stuff. And I haven't gone to synthetic yet. We build the harness ourselves here because it's military harness and nobody really builds it anymore. But my next set that I build is going to be.
Well, where you live, you're a lot like us. I mean, in the summertime, things mold overnight. You can't leave leather outside, or you're going to have a mess. It's just. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, so you do you keep it inside? That's a good question for all those of us who live in the South. What do you do with your leather? Do you keep it inside?
We keep it all inside under fans. It's not air conditioned.
Okay.
We have fans on it all the time, and we also use a mildew inhibitor in our that's in our conditioner. Skidmore's already has it in there. If you're using a good grade saddle oil, you can just add a little turpentine to it. Really, I mean, that's what they use for mildew inhibitor.
Right.
But you need some kind of mildew inhibitor to, and even then, you know, when it gets 100% humidity and it's raining and the electricity goes off and 24 hours the fans aren't there, then boy, mildew's up.
Mm, for sure.
And here we have the opposite problem. We've got the high dryness of the mountain desert climate in Colorado, so we have humidifiers in our tack rooms.
Right.
Pretty interesting, huh? It depends on where you live.
Yeah. Yep, it does. And that high dry climate, those leather needs more oil there or more conditioner. And just because it's just like your skin dries out. You know, I'm from San Angelo out in the desert of West Texas. And, you know, you have to drink three times as much water as you do here just to keep yourself hydrated.
Yes. And lotion and chapstick. A lot of all those things. So the tack needs it too. Absolutely. So, Bob, our last question, if we want to go ahead, is could you please explain the three main types of English and Western saddles and the correct uses for each?
Sure. In Western saddles, you have roping saddles. Basically, they're designed to rope off of with a rope attached to the horn. They typically have double rigging, so they'll have a flank cinch as well as a front cinch, although some of the Rocky Mountain guys don't do that, the ones that don't tie hard and fast. But that's kind of the typical Western roping saddle. And then you have the girth rings are attached to the tree itself. They have a yoke that comes down, and so they're screwed into the tree. And then speed and performance saddles, most of them have the girth rings inside the skirt. So they're attached to the skirt of the saddle, the leather part that has the wool on it, with rivets, which is just inherently not near as strong as one attached with yokes to the tree. And so they're built for closer contact and more speed, but definitely not to be roped on or even to pony horses on that. And then you have kind of everything else, which is endurance saddles or McClellans, or they all kind of fall into those categories, and many of them have a combination of, like ours have a drop rig that can rotate. There's all kinds of different, but basically those are the three English, or the three Western types. Then in English, you have deep-seated saddles, which tend to be polo saddles or dressage saddles. They're designed to sit the trot and work at speed or big movement. Then you have all-purpose saddles, which are trying to be both a dressage saddle and a jumping saddle. So they have, they're kind of not the best of both worlds, but the best of two worlds. And then you have a saddle that's strictly a jumping saddle, and they're always spring tree, and they'll have bigger knee rolls and a straighter, just a not a straighter seat, but a seat that allows you to sit forward more.
So, Bob, I so appreciate you being on today. Could you go ahead and let people know how they can find out more about you, how they can find out more about Parsons Mounted Cavalry there at Texas A&M?
Sure. They're welcome to call me if they'd like. My number is 979-255-6979. We have a big Facebook thing that we post on every day. At Parsons Mounted Cavalry Facebook. And we have a website, which is pmc.tamu.edu. So Parsons Mounted Cavalry, Texas A&M University Education.
Great, Bob. Thank you so much for being on the call today. Merry Christmas.
Oh, you're welcome. Merry Christmas to you. And stay warm up there in the cold.
Thank you. I'm still jealous.
Lives in Durango. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Well, you are listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek here, and I am with Christy of the Certified Horsemanship Association. Coach Den is in the producer chair, and we are brought to you today by Myler Bits. Well, we wanted to mention that this will actually be your last show for 2015. But Christy, if you missed all of the past shows, you can go back. It's the third Tuesday of every month. You can just search for CHA or Certified Horsemanship at horsesinthemorning.com. And you will find all of the past episodes. And of course, one of the easiest ways to listen to the recorded version of this show, of the CHA show, is to just go to our app, iOS or Android, search for Horse Radio Network. It's free and it's easy to use. All right, Christy, we are ready.
Good. Well, I'm so excited. You know, I think our topic today is so wonderful, knowing more about tack. We all have our different preferences and our likes and dislikes. So being able to learn more about the different kinds is great. So next on, we have Mitzi Summers. She's been an instructor and trainer for many years. She's actually the recipient of our 2010 Instructor of the Year Award. She's a level 4 centered riding instructor. And Mitzi has certified hundreds of instructors for CHA as a clinician for us. She also travels internationally to teach instructor and training workshops for centered riding. So it's so wonderful to have you on, Mitzi. How are you today?
I am fine, and I'm honored to be on this program. Thank you very much for including me.
Well, thank you so much. I know you're heading off to Alabama today, and you're holding up your trip for the show, so I appreciate that.
Yes, that's fine. I'll get a good start.
Well, I would love to go ahead and have you share a little bit more about your background. Let people know where you're located today, because I know that you do travel quite a bit, but let them know where your home base is and give us a little bit more about you.
Sure. I have three major locations when I'm not traveling, and one is in central New York, Fort Plain, New York. Another is in Madison, Alabama, and the third is in Port Townsend, Washington. So I divide my time between those when I'm not just traveling and judging and doing shows. I completed two horse master courses right off the bat when I was much younger, because I always knew I wanted to teach, but I wanted to teach well. And I've been lucky enough to apprentice with some wonderful people like Chuck Grant and Vi Hopkins and Sally Swift and Richard Schrake, which has been wonderful. And a little bit of showbiz. I got to ride with the Royal Olympus and Stallion Show. which was a lot of fun. So I've just developed a system of positive reinforcement and very individualized training for horses and people. And that's why I love CHA so much, because it teaches instructors and helps guide instructors to become better teachers.
Well, I love all that background. I'm going to have to hear some stories and some things about your Lipids Honor days. That sounds great.
I'm a makeup person.
That's awesome. So I know, you know, we were talking earlier on the show, Mitzi, that everyone is so different. You know, you don't talk about politics, religion, or bits and bidding at the dinner table when you have a bunch of riding instructors get together. But I do have, you know, I know that you kind of have gone on a different route entirely, and you really like Dr. Cook's Bitless Bridles, which I know Dr. Cook has come and he's done numerous talks for us at our conference. That's one of the things that's so great about certified horsemanship is we are all breed, all disciplines, so we can have a wide variety of opinions and things come and chat with us. So could you tell us a little bit more about that and why you enjoy those?
Well, I use them as a tool, and a lot of my, I would say the majority of my pupils use them now. In America, most classes you still can't show in them. I will still use bits and ride in bits, and my students will still use bits. But I found it to be a good answer when you're having a problem with a horse. It's a diagnostic tool, and also I have people that are doing open jumping. They're trail riding in the mountains of Washington. They're doing fourth-level dressage, Grand Prix dressage, in his bitless bridle. And one of the things I like most about it is that it's total head control, so you're not specifically thinking of just working with the mouth of the horse. It's working on the whole horse in just a very kind way. And I've had people that have come to me getting ready to sell their horses because the horse chomped on the bit or opened his mouth or swung his head up and down and was restless and ran away with them and did all sorts of things. And one of the first things I do is try a Dr. Cook bitless bridle. And very, very, very often that is the key. That is the tool. Because if a horse, if you can ever imagine when you had a toothache, that's about the only thing you can think about. And so if a horse is uncomfortable in his mouth with a bit, you can't communicate with the horse effectively in any way because he's in pain. And actually, the worst runaways I've ever seen were caused not by the person not having enough control, but by the person having a bit that was hurting the horse. And so the horse was running from pain. And as you know, they don't quite see things the way we do. And so if they're in pain, they're running from the pain, and they're not realizing that if maybe they slowed down, it might get less. I also recommend bitless bridles as instruction tools. And actually, I have a couple articles coming out. One is in thehorseshoof.com, and there's an article coming out, and I'd be willing to share it with CHA teaching with the bitless bridle. And I find that very useful because one of the things we know as instructors is the difficulty that people have gaining an independent seat. And sometimes they will balance, or a lot of times they'll balance by the reins, which, of course, causes the horse great discomfort. So if you're using a bitless bridle, you can teach contact, you can teach that wonderful connection with the horse and not worry about hurting him.
Yeah, I would agree too that happens a lot. You know, that's why they say over in the Spanish School of Vienna, you don't get your reins for an entire year. You have to be able to have that independent seat first. So really good point. So, you know, Bob brought up a really good point, Mitzi, during his interview in regards to if the saddle doesn't fit, kind of like if your shoes don't fit. So if your shoes are too tight, that's going to inhibit your performance. And then if your shoes are too big, you might try to put on a bunch of extra socks, but that's still going to inhibit your performance. And boy, do we see that a lot with pads, don't we? Oh, I'll just put an extra pad on. Oh, I'll just do an extra pad. But sometimes pads really can help the horse and really can help with saddle fit. So I'd love you to talk a little bit more about some of the pads that you use and why.
Yes, that would. What I find, and it was very interesting, and probably it isn't done anymore, but at one of my horse master courses in England, they had something called wither pads, and if the saddle was a little too wide and was hurting the horse's back at all, they would put a wither pad on, which of course just increased the pounds per square inch, which wasn't the answer. So if I'm teaching, I bring a lot of pads with me in my van when I go to clinics and when I'm teaching. And what I see often is saddles that are pinching, saddles that are a little too wide, and it's amazing how stoic horses can be, that they can put up with a lot of pain, a lot of discomfort, and not show it. And so sometimes people are reluctant to think that their saddle might not fit because they're not seeing a reaction from their horses. I'm going to mention a brand here just because it's been so useful, and I've talked to a couple of saddle makers, and they agreed with me. Wintech puts out something called a comfort pad, and they're very inexpensive, and they're closed cell in that you can, like, put your thumb and your forefinger together around the pad, and you can't feel the pressure. So it actually does absorb shock. It's not the correct answer. The correct answer is to get a saddle, of course, that actually fits your horse really well. But I found it very, very useful until they can find such a saddle. But that's one of the commonest things that people, if you're an instructor or a trainer and you go to a new barn, you always do a tack check. And that's one of the most common things I find, that saddles, especially English saddles, that are pinching the horses. Also, something that's very important is when you're looking at the saddle, to make sure that the center of the seat is level, because often I'll find people maybe using a lift back pad, something like that, and it's actually tilting the rider's pelvis crookedly so that the rider sits back a little bit, thereby relying on the reins for balance and also causing their lower leg to come forward. So saddle fit is so important, not only for the horse, but for the rider, because if the saddle puts their pelvis at an angle that isn't neutral, then they're fighting the saddle for the whole lesson. And it's very, very difficult for them.
Now, we've talked a lot today, Mitzi, about bits and bridles and saddles, but I'm going to go into some kind of unusual pieces of tack that people have probably heard of, and they think, oh, do I need it? Do I not need it? What's its really use? So let's talk just a little bit about martingales. If you could explain the different types of martingales and why people might think to use them, and then what your personal opinion is on the use of them.
Okay. And one thing I wanted to add is kind of way to look at problems that you have with horses. I've heard people say in a very negative term, my horse, oh, he opens his mouth, or oh, he tosses his head, like the horse, you know, thought up to do that all night long and is picking on their rider. And of course, you need to find out the cause. So things like really tight flash nose bands, they have things called crank nose bands that they'll put really, really tight so the horse can't open his mouth, are actually abusive. So you need to find out the reason that the horse is having a problem, that he's opening his mouth or tossing his head or whatever it is, and then you alleviate that cause. You don't look at something, you know, tie his head down or something, and then you can't see the tossing of the head. I use very few artificial aids. I want to feel the horse. I want to feel what's going on with him and have a direct contact with him. And so especially things like draw reins, there's been so many studies on the use of draw reins and the terrible things they can do to horses. I'm very careful with side reins. You have to be careful because, of course, the horse uses his head and neck for balance, especially at the walk and the canter. So people that are using side reins for lunging, I think you have to be very careful with that. What I do is something called double lunging. So I'll have a lunge line, and I always lunge from a halter or a cavesson, never a bit. I never lunge from a bit, and I know that is accepted. But especially when you put the lunge line through the near ring of the bit and over the horse's pole and then to the rider's hand. I've had several chiropractors tell me how how harmful that is to the horse, to the atlas and the axis of the horse. But with double lunging, you're just running a line on the outside of the horse and holding it in your hand, and then a line from the halter of the horse. And I found that much more effective than side reins or any kind of bitting rig, bitting harness. I just think that you need to feel exactly what the horse needs. So with the double lunging that I teach, and it's very useful, and I studied with a couple of people that had graduated from Samoor to learn this skill, I can in 1 second give the horse a little bit more right rein or take in a little more left rein and help the horse balance. Whereas if you have fixed appliances that force the horse into a position, especially if his muscles are tense, you can do a lot of harm to the horse physically and mentally.
You know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking we're going to have to do a video at conference this year in October of you doing the double lunging and explain that to people. We'll have to put that on our calendar, Mitzi. Okay.
Okay, I would love to. And it's done a lot more in Europe, I believe, than over here. But it's I've never had a horse that didn't benefit from it. So I would love to do that. And it's a very doable skill. It just takes some practice.
So could we chat for a little bit about what you've heard about the different types of martingales and how they're used?
Well, I don't get upset if I go to a barn and someone has a standing martingale on a school horse, and they have it fitted so that when the horse's head is in a comfortable position, it goes right up into the throat latch, so it can't force the horse in an unnatural position. If they feel that they need to do that, I don't have a big problem with it, except it's probably not even necessary. But I don't like running martingales. I don't like German martingales, anything, again, that gives leverage, that gives you more force, that doesn't. I like the feeling of the connection. It's from your shoulder blade through your arm, through your elbow, through your forehand, right to the horse's mouth, like almost like running water. And I like that connection, that I can feel. There's an expression, you can feel the horse's hooves in your hands. When you're really connected with him, it's the most wonderful feeling. And if you have an artificial appliance that blocks the horse, as we all know, horses weren't really meant to be ridden. They look like they have been because there's that nice place for us to sit, but there's not a lot of muscle, there's not a lot of support in their back. So when we're riding our horses, we're either making them better physically and mentally, or we're breaking them down. And I think a lot of us have seen broken down horses. And so I really believe in taking the time to learn to have an independent seat. Use your seat, leg, and hands as your principal aids. I will have my students use, sometimes if they're riding dressage, they can use a dressage whip, but they can only use it about as hard as they would use it on their own face. And I tell them that it's an explanation to the horse. So if they're asking for a lateral movement and they use their leg, and the horse might think, I'm not quite sure what's going on, and then the whip is just a further explanation, but it's not to be used as punishment. So I think you have to be careful about the use of those. Not that if a horse rears or is bucking or something that you might not need to, but that I would use a bat, and I would make darn sure that it was necessary, that I didn't cause it in some way, like rushing a horse and making him jump to horse fences that are too high, or when he's too young. Then he would have a right to be stopping, and then the use of any kind of a whip as a punishment would be an abusive thing for a rider to do.
Absolutely, and I love your approach, Mitzi. And, you know, Mitzi's spoken at many of our international conferences. She'll be with us in Nashville, and of course, our conferences are open to the public. So, but Mitzi, in the meantime, since they probably don't want to wait all the way until October to hear more about you, how can people find out more about you? How do they track you down?
Okay, my website is MitziSummers.net. I'm on Facebook under Mitzi Elizabeth Summers and have a blog attached to that. My email is Summers Dressage, that's S-U-M-M-E-R-S, summersdressage@aol.com. And my phone number is 315-790-9593. And once I work with someone, if they have a question, I just had a student last night, and I was on the phone about an hour with them because they had a behavioral problem with their horse out in the pasture. But once someone has a lesson with me or works with me, they can get hold of me, and absolutely for free, I will try to help them because I think it's so important to help people with their horses so we've got happy horses and happy people.
I agree 100%. Thank you, Mitzi, for being on the show today. I really appreciate you.
Thank you for inviting me, and I hope that everybody that's listening will come to Nashville and see the wonderful conference next year.
Great. Safe trip to Alabama.
Thank you. Take care, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
Happy holiday. Bye-bye.
Nashville, you know, that's a great place to have it, by the way.
Yes, we're actually going to be at Middle Tennessee State University just outside of Nashville in Murfreesboro, but I'm sure we'll be doing a trip to the Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah, Murfreesboro is where they used to have Road to the Horse in that big arena they have there.
Yes, and that's where we'll be doing our event.
Oh, is it? Good.
It is.
Cool, very cool. Yeah, we did a kind of family reunion in Nashville, and we had a blast. We would definitely go back to Nashville. And did get to see the Grand Ole Opry in the old theater. Although I got to tell you, I have to admit that the first hour and a half I found very boring because they had the senior crowd out to do the old country music, which is not for me. But then Charlie Daniels came out and livened it up. So
there you go.
So we ended on a good point, but oh, those church pews got really really tired of sitting in those for about an hour and a half. But it was cool seeing how they actually do the radio show and the production of it.
Oh, I bet. I bet you really enjoyed
that.
That was kind of neat.
I'm not a big old country fan. I do like the new country, but not really the old stuff. And whew. But you guys are going to love, you're going to love Nashville.
and then, the barbecue's you know, we'll probably have people go down, you know, by the riverfront and then they can walk around from bar to bar. And I'll tell you what you never want to do in Nashville. You never want to karaoke sing because unless you're really good, you're going to not be good.
Yeah, exactly. Because there are actually people there that can sing.
Oh, amazing. They're all trying to get discovered, right? And oh my goodness, amazing singers. Go to a karaoke bar and you'll be entertained like for real. Like there's never an off key.
Instead of laughing, right? Exactly.
Oh, so good.
Instead of making fun of them the whole time. Yeah, it was fun. We actually spent an afternoon just the whole family of my brothers and their wives and kids and stuff. We all went in and got cowboy hats. One afternoon, and we had so much fun because you know they have huge stores there, so it was a lot of fun.
You know,
it's not that far from here. Maybe we'll have to actually come to that one.
I know we would love it if you would broadcast live one year from one of our shows
from one of our venues.
Nashville this year, Jen. You know you want to go, and then next year it's going to be in Lexington for our 50th anniversary.
So Nashville is actually in 2016.
It is
okay. Well, that's not too far from us, actually. So
something to think about.
Yeah, yeah. We could definitely go back there. And we were there at Christmas time, so that was kind of cool, too. That was kind of
neat. It's so pretty at Christmas time.
Well, we're going to let you go enjoy your snow and have fun with the kids today. Get outside, do some sledding or whatever you guys do there in your part of Colorado.
I'm sure there will be a snowman making extravaganza, and I'm sure there will be a let's throw snowballs at each other extravaganza. Mom of boys, right?
That's right. That is right. I know. I came from a family of four boys, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, yes. Your poor mother.
Yeah, exactly. Well, tell us again where they can find the options for holiday gifts, Christmas presents on the CHA.
Absolutely. If you go to chainstructors.com and you can go under our store and you'll see our manuals there, our posters for barn safety with some very adorable fun pictures that Susan Harris did for us, our DVDs and all kinds of things. And we do have four regional conferences that are already up on our regional page. If you don't want to come all the way to Nashville, we're having one in Washington in March. We're having another one in New York in April. And then we're having two others, and one of them is going to be in Wyoming in June, and the other one's going to be all the way up in Manitoba. For those Canadians listening, that's going to be in May. So you can check those out as well for some great education.
Sounds like a plan. And as I said earlier in the show, you can find all of the past episodes for the Certified Horsemanship Association at horsesinthemorning.com. Just do a search there and you'll find it. And if you're ever looking for a specific guest, if we've ever had one on, you can just go to horseradionetwork.com and search there for the guest's name, and it'll bring up whether they've been on any of our shows. We've had over 6,000 guests. So if you're looking for somebody in specific, we probably have had them on at one point or another. Well, we'll be back tomorrow morning. Jamie will be here for our Wednesday show, and we will see you, Christy, in the next year.
Yes. Have a happy holidays and Merry Christmas and a wonderful new year.
Can't you hear those bells? Can't you hear those bells? Can't you hear those bells? Christmas times are coming, Christmas times are coming, Christmas times are coming, and I know I'm going home. Snowflakes are falling.